If you want to learn about death and dying, just about every college has a course on the subject, covering all the aspects from medical to cultural. For one of the most remarkable courses on death, we go to Keene University at Union, New Jersey, for Norma Bowe's Death in Perspective class. Journalist Erica Hayasaki signed up for the course, and she's written a book about its generous-hearted teacher, the riveting life stories of her students, and what they all have learned from death about life. I'm Jim Meadows, and Erica Hayasaki and Norma Bowe are my guests today on Focus to talk about the death class. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Death is a mystery to us, the living, but you can still learn something about it and earn college credit while you do so. Many colleges and universities offer courses on death. Right now, I'm looking at the catalog write-up for the University of Illinois' Death and Dying class, Social Work 340s. And it says that content for the course will examine different types of death, the impact of death throughout the lifespan, cultural beliefs and practices regarding death and dying, grief, healing after loss, legal and ethical issues related to death, and the role of social workers at the end of life. Also, students will be encouraged to examine their own thoughts, values, feelings, and beliefs about death and dying. I was able to find similar write-ups at other universities and community colleges around Illinois. And for today's program, we're looking at a college course on death that may go a little further than the others. It's Norma Bowe's Death in Perspective course at Keene University in Union, New Jersey. The course and its instructor caught the attention of journalist Erica Hayasaki, who actually enrolled in the course on the way to producing her book. That book is The Death Class, A True Story About Life. It's newly published by Simon & Schuster. Erica Hayasaki joins me now on the phone. Welcome to Focus.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
And welcome also to the teacher of the death class at Keene University, Dr. Norma Bowe.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, good morning. Erica, how did you wind up paying such close attention to a class on death?
I was actually stationed as a journalist in New York City. I was writing for the LA Times, and I was a national correspondent. And at the time, I was covering a lot of death and major news events. For example, I covered the Virginia Tech massacre. I was there on the ground right after it happened and stayed for the next couple weeks. I covered a lot of intense events like that that involved, you know, people dying in tragic ways. And one day I came across a student-written article in the campus newspaper in New Jersey at Keene University about a class on death, and this very unique professor who the students raved about. And so I decided to call up the professor and see what this class is all about. I wrote an article for the LA Times that ended up on the front page of their main page. And then I just kept going back for many, a couple years later, and also went up and enrolled in the class so that I could write more about it, because I knew there was so much more to talk about and to tell.
Well, Norma, how did you wind up teaching a course on death? How long have you been teaching the course?
I've been teaching the course now about 14 years, and I took it over from someone who was retiring. So I looked at the syllabus, I looked at the course outline, and I said to myself, there's lots of ways to make this way more interactive, interpersonal, and, you know, kind of in a way, it sounds funny, but bring death to life and make it, you know, a very real topic.
Well, we're wondering if you've ever taken a college course on death, or have you learned important things about death on your own, whether it's a physical, I'm talking to the listeners now and asking if they'd like to go ahead and call in during this program, talk to Norma Bowe, talk to Erica Hayasaki, and the number is 1-800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL, and you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Focus580. That is a question for you as well, of course, Norma, is you've been teaching this course for several years. there must have been something that attracted you to it in the first place. But what have you taken away from it?
I've taken so much away from it. And yes, you know, I'm a nurse by background, so I've worked in the ICUs, I've worked in the emergency rooms, I've done some work in hospice. So I've seen a lot of death, and, you know, I've watched people go through the grief process. I myself have gone through the grief process. And I take so much inspiration, so much hope from my students and from the course every single semester. We have a very urban campus here at Kane University. We're surrounded by cities that have very high violence rates, for instance. So as an example, I walked into a new group of Death and Perspective students yesterday, and when I asked the question, how many of you know someone who's been murdered, 3/4 of the class raised their hand. So we're kind of in a unique situation here at Kane, and the course is just life-changing and very inspirational.
What I often hear said over and over again is that we're a society that tries to insulate itself from death. You know, ultimately you can't do that, but you can try to insulate yourself from thinking about death. Is that true? Are the people who come to your course maybe the exceptions in our culture?
Listen, I think that my students are very courageous for taking a course on death. I do agree with you. I think in our society, we ignore death until it's right at our doorstep. And by then, there's not much we know about it. We're afraid. We have death anxiety. And to take a course on death at such a young age, you know, most of my students are in their 20s. Some are in their 30s. But to take a course like this just is life-changing because you begin to see that we're fragile, that our time on this planet is limited. We don't know how long we're here. And I think it encourages people to finish their unfinished business. It encourages them to talk to their family members. It helps them to understand that now's the time to spend more time with your grandparents, you know. And so I see it as a real act of bravery for them to enroll in the course.
Well, let's go ahead and talk to someone on the phone now. And line 4, Tanya from Terre Haute, I understand you've taken a college course on death.
Yes, actually... I have a bachelor's degree in sociology, and as part of it, you have to take a class over gerontology, and of course, that's the study of aging, and a large portion of that was actually dedicated to death, and now, strangely enough, I work in the death industry, and it's not something you'd expect to end up doing.
And when we say death industry, what do you mean?
I work for a burial vault company.
Okay. Do they say death industry in the death industry?
Actually, yes.
Okay.
But it's you know, when you look at, you know, we deal with a lot of funeral directors. We deal with people who you deal with death every day. And, you know, it's not something that when you're 20 or 30 that you really think about a whole lot. And I think that the class really did help, you know, talk about your long-term care needs and how to deal with people when they're going through death and dying, because nobody really has the correct answer.
Norma, would you like to follow up on that?
Yeah, I would. And I find it so interesting that's the work you're doing, and I'm sure it's really quite, fulfilling for you. It's not always the gerontology age group, though, that dies. You know, I have a student right now with a brain tumor. She's 21 years old, and, you know, we have a lot of my students have lost friends and family members at a young age through accidents, suicide, homicides. So I think being able to look at it from a whole life perspective and understand the impact that death has on us from the time we're young until we do reach our older years, I think that's really valuable.
I really would have loved to have taken a sociology of death course, but it wasn't offered at the time that I went to the university.
Well, I think you are amazing that you were even seeking out courses like that. I mean, you're really ahead of the game.
Thank you.
And Tanya, thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome.
We are on Focus on WILL, and the program is about death, or learning about it. We're talking with Norma Bowe, who teaches the Death and Perspective course at Keene University in New Jersey. And we're talking with Erica Hayasaki, who writes about Norma and the course in her book, The Death Class, A True Story About Life, and it's published by Simon & Schuster. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Again, that's 1-800-222-WILL. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Erica, I wanted to ask you about the people that you write about in your book, because you focus on, I would guess, three or four students of Norma's course, and you know, they all have really life or death issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah, so there, I met many students over the course of hanging out with the professor, and I had the chance to interview a lot of them in depth, but I ended up focusing on a handful very closely, and one of them was a young woman named Caitlin, who was suffering from death anxiety and who also had, you know, some family issues that she was dealing with and some obsessive compulsive disorder. And when she met the professor, she was incredibly afraid of death. She was also in love with a young man named Jonathan, and Jonathan had, when he was a young boy, actually witnessed his mother murdered by his father, and he grew up with this, living with this, you know, knowing that he had seen this in his life and having lost his mother that way. And so when I was around New Jersey, these were some of the people that I met through the professor, and she was reaching out to them and working with them on how they coped with death. Another young man was named Israel, and he actually was a member of a gang and almost killed somebody at one point. And when he came into the death class, you know, he was trying to turn his life around but wasn't really sure how and wasn't even ready to talk about it. But he ended up exploring some of these issues and visiting one of the field trips that the professor takes her students on is to a maximum security prison. And in there, he was able to kind of see where he might have ended up had he taken a life. So there are a lot of very powerful stories. I, of course, couldn't capture all of them. I think there are a lot of, you know, there are other death education classes in America, and I think they actually started after the 60s. There were, you know, in education, people weren't really talking about death, and there was a movement by a lot of educators to include some of these courses. But I think Norma's class is unique, and she's also a very special professor. I think that, you know, it takes a special kind of person to deal with the different layers of death rather than just simply approaching it from an intellectual perspective, but also giving students the field work and also being just very, very aware that they're coming in with these intense personal issues, and you can't really ignore that when you teach a class like this.
Norma, is that often the case besides the three people that Erica wrote about? Do you often have people who are really have things to work out that bring them to the class?
Absolutely. And I think that's the other thing we ignore, you know, just like we ignore death. I think most of us are walking around with a lot of grief, and we've lost people. We've been in very difficult situations. I don't think it's unique. I think it's universal. And I think there's just not a place to really talk about it. We're supposed to be okay all the time. And if we're not okay, people are scrutinizing that and they're judging that, you know. And I find that once the students get into a safe place like the classroom, where the goal is to do some bereavement work, that these stories and these burdens that young people, all of us, even older people, carry around, it's just extraordinary. And Erica, you know, did such an amazing job, really, of weaving all of these stories together. You know, she focused on a few of the folks in the class, but she wove the stories together with the construct of the life cycle model, and it's just a really beautiful book. It really is amazing.
The life cycle model is something I want to get to in a moment. Right now, I'd like to take another phone call on line one. Charles from Champaign, good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Charles Vaughn. I'm a funeral director and owner of a funeral home here in Champaign. I congratulate heartily Dr. Bowe's efforts on bringing us out of the closet, if you will. And also on, I've read excerpts, and Erica, I'm going to buy your book, from your book, and I think it is beautifully done, and well, and very clear, and very, very, very easy to comprehend. My concern is that, and the young lady that called in before, from a vault company, is to be congratulated on taking courses. However, our problem in funeral service is nomenclature to some degree, in that we do refer to, not we per se, but the vendors who are purveying their products to funeral homes talk about funeral industry. And that slaps me in the face. We are not an industry. We don't manufacture things. We coach and counsel folks on how to have a meaningful conclusionary ritual or ceremony that will help them learn to transition. My point being is that Dr. Bowe's work and Erica's work should be in every curriculum in every mortuary science program at every mortuary college in the United States. This is not being thoroughly discussed to the students who are coming out to practice funeral service. They have no clue about the difficulty.
I'm wondering, Charles, in mortuary science, in the training, well, even the training of the staff that come to work for you, what sort of understanding, what do you see things missing that perhaps they should know about sooner?
Oh, very, very much so. And if they haven't learned it in mortuary science programs, they won't. Of course, they're not aware until they sit with me and make arrangements for, let's say, a young couple whose four-year-old is dying from cancer, let's say. What do you say to those folks and what do you do for those folks? It's funeral service is not about selling paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. It's about educating families on, look, your life will never, ever be the same. Once bereaved, you're always bereaved. And I could go on, and I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir here when I'm talking to Erica.
Well, Charles, can I make a comment?
Yes.
One of the field trips I take my students on is to a funeral home. And I want to just say that you all do such important work. I have watched you turn a family's life around because of the gentle, kind, compassionate way you've treated them in their darkest moments. I have watched all of you put people back together again so that folks can have an open casket, so that families can have that last goodbye. It's so important for them to be able to do that. And I find that the folks working in the funeral homes are really kind of part magicians with what they're able to do to help families. And they're definitely grief counselors. And usually the families are so grateful at the end of a funeral service that they had someone walking them through the darkest day of their life. So what you do is extremely important. And my students get a lot from the funeral home field trip.
Yeah, I have to actually agree with that as a witness to the field trip that was at the funeral home. You know, I was able, with the class, to see the people who worked behind the scenes and even talk to people who did the embalming and with what amazing care and passion they have for their work. And even for one of the people in the book, one person actually does end up passing away over the course of the book. And the funeral home, thanks to the relationship with Norma and her class, actually chipped in to help pay because this young man didn't have the financial means, you know, so they were able to give him, a funeral and work on his body and really give the family the closure that they needed. So I think that becomes a very important lesson that the students witness firsthand. And I know Norma has many stories of the funeral homes coming through for various students to help in a counseling way and other ways too.
Charles, I will confess that as I started, you know, preparing for this show and reading Erica's book, one of the first things that came to mind was a much more critical look at the funeral procession, and that was The Loved One, Evelyn Waugh's satirical novel from half a century ago, which essentially does accuse the funeral industry of you know, just wanting to sell stuff. I guess Jessica Mitford's nonfiction book from about that time made the same argument. Does that exist?
Jim, it exists at a very, very injurious prognosis to the mom and pop funeral homes in the United States. More and more funeral homes are being purchased by large corporations that have a very rigid schedule for all of their employees to follow. You cannot spend more than X amount of minutes with your restorative work or embalming. You can only spend so much time with the family. We're going to tell you how to sell that family a casket. Yes, it's rampant, and it needs, and it's doing nothing but destroying our credibility as funeral service providers, mom and pop funeral homes, which are the majority of funeral homes in this country, are being slowly, one by one, taken off the radar screen. Yes, it exists, and they will leave the name of the previous owner on the sign. They will not tell them that Joe Jones is no longer the owner, but the owner is Service Corporation International. They own 40,000 funeral homes in the United States. They have 12 in Chicago. Their prices are exorbitant. Their service is poor. They have been a black eye to funeral service.
Well, Charles, it's interesting. Just 2 days ago, we were talking about healthcare on this program, and I think I heard some of the same thread of complaint for medical care, in which essentially large commercial institutions making constrictions on how much time doctors can spend with patients.
Indeed. And I'm sure that Norma is very familiar with epidemiologic studies that have been done that show, in fact, that when a marriage has been a very solid marriage, it's not unlikely, in fact, it's quite commonplace, that when one of the two spouses pass away, the other one shortly follows.
Yeah.
So there's a great deal of actual, in fact, I'll use the term kind of broadly here, but dying from a broken heart. Mm-hmm. You can die from a broken heart, unequivocally. Your physiology changes. Of course, your cognition is impaired. When people arrive here to make funeral arrangements, we are the last people that they want to deal with. So we have to be careful, very cautious about what we're saying, how we say it, what we do, and we have to build communications. And what Norma has written, or Erica has written about, and what Norma is doing is at the front line of what every funeral home should be doing.
Well,
and I want to, just on the phone, just offer them, I want to have a dialogue with them after this is over, because I want this book, I would love to have this book on my website. I would love to take this and blow it out to nationally, so people will do better. The conjugal bereavement is very closely linked to significant clinical depression, and it leaves the widow or the widower a home. When the children leave, she's there, he's there by himself. What happens?
Well, Charles, I want to make sure that we get your contact information and get it over to our guests so you folks can get
it. I appreciate it very much. And, again, thank you for allowing me to be verbose, but it's a subject I feel very passionate about. And, Norma, you're kind to say that. Funeral service is a calling. After you have had a close relationship, an intense relationship for like 3 days with the bereaved family, and the widow comes to you after the service as the funeral director and hugs you and says, "You made my husband look great." Mm-hmm. That's worth another 10 years on my longevity to continue doing what I try to do. And it's just thrilling to do that for people.
Charles,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. And that struck me. That's part of what you do in the course, Norma, is that students will be out at funeral homes, for among other places.
Yes. We go on a lot of field trips. We do at least six a semester. So we spend time in a cemetery. We spend time at the funeral home. We go to the prison. We go to Ronald McDonald House. We see a cremation. We go see an autopsy.
Now, why the prison? I admit that prisons, you know, are not happy places, but they're not what I associate immediately with death.
You know, people in prison are living, breathing human beings with heartbeats, and, you know, they're physically alive. But there's a lot of death in prison. There's death of freedom. There's death of expression. There's death of movement. There's the death of being able to see your loved ones. And so it's been a very interesting field trip because there's a lot of ways to die. It's not just physically die. And, you know, we all have our own personal prison. We all have ways that we hold ourselves back from doing the things that we need to do. Sometimes the bars aren't visible, but they're there. And so it just lends an amazing discussion after the field trip is over. We also debate capital punishment. We don't have that in New Jersey, but many states do. So we use it for a lot of different reasons. When the students walk out of the prison doors, you know, they're breathing freedom air, and they're very grateful to get in their cars and have the ability to drive away.
And, you know, also in those field trips, there are prisoners who have, of course, had their own encounters with death or maybe even taken a life. And I think that for Israel, one of the people in the book who almost ended up in prison, to be able to meet people who did take that extra step and take a life and see that. And, you know, also in the prison, I saw Norma teach classes on death. And people die in the prison. There's hospice in the prison. So, you know, these issues are still going on. And I've also was able to witness the debate on capital punishment where she actually had students and inmates do a live debate on capital punishment, which is fascinating to see that.
Let's go ahead and take another caller. This is line two, Susan in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. So far what I've been hearing is all about after you die, dealing with the fact of death. I would say that it's as important to get more information out about what can happen during the process of dying, which might be sudden, but it might also be months and months. What I've heard from people who try to talk to their doctors about this, that in the few examples that I have, is that the doctors are not forthcoming about what really might be happening to them. And my own experience with one time with hospice is I didn't get a whole lot of information from the hospice nurse either. There is a short book that I would like to recommend that might go partway toward helping with some of this, and that's called Dying, A Natural Passage. It's available on Amazon. I bought it in bulk from the author because I liked it so much. A family member sent me a copy during the last experience I was having with a family member dying. It's by Denise Cope, D-E-N-Y-S-C-O-P-E. And her point of view is that we, you know, it used to be that people didn't talk about pregnancy and childbirth, and women were afraid, and husbands were afraid. People were excluded from the process. And there's been a lot of childbirth education during my lifetime, but there isn't a whole lot of stages of dying education and how to be present for somebody, what things to expect, what things to not try to do that can make things worse for somebody who's dying. Like, if they're not interested in eating, it's because their body is shutting down. And trying to feed them can actually make them even more uncomfortable. There's also it was a nice article by David Brooks in the New York Times recently, sometime in the last 2 weeks, about how to be present for somebody who's in a crisis, which may not necessarily mean that they're dying, but it's applicable, I think. And people can find that on the New York Times website. I think entering David Brooks and maybe dying or crisis or presence, those words might turn up this opinion article. Thanks very much. Oh, and the other thing I would say is that we often think that in this country we seem to think that death is optional and that we should just fight. And oftentimes it doesn't extend our lives. It makes us miserable. And it means that we don't take time and don't have the physical ability and mental ability to say goodbye and close things out with the people that we need to make peace with or we want to say goodbye to, because we're so busy being really, really feeling awful. And so I would share those words. Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Yeah, you know,
thank you so much, Susan.
I do go over all of that in the class. We do a whole lecture on the biology of dying because she's absolutely right.
And there is a section of the book now. Yeah. I was struck by that you didn't really pick it up later in the book as you got into other topics. But there is a fascinating passage, Norma, where Erica writes about you talking about what is going on biologically.
Yes.
As the body in stages shuts down. Susan mentioned one of them, you know, that you touched on about not trying to force food on someone at that
right.
point.
Right. And, you know, we forget that we're the sole creators of our life, but we're also the captains of our death, and we do have a lot of say in how we die. And people have the right to refuse aggressive treatments if they're, you know, in stage 4 terminal illness and they're dying, you know. And the more we educate about those stages of dying and the more people recognize them, the more things will happen, like Susan said, where people will be at the bedside and people will finish their unfinished business and things will transition naturally and progressively and peacefully rather than having so much, interference at the end.
Well, let's go ahead and take a short break right now, and we'll come right back to continue our conversation about the death class with author Erica Hayasaki and death class instructor Norma Bowe. This is Focus on WILL. Welcome back to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. We are talking about death, and by way of doing that, talking about life as well. That's the experience I had in reading Erica Hayasaki's new book, The Death Class, A True Story About Life. It's published by Simon & Schuster. It's about a college course on death and the ideas surrounding death taught at Keene University in New Jersey, though of course there are many courses on death and dying at colleges and universities around the country. The book's author, Erica Hayasaki, and the class instructor, Norma Bowe, are my guests on Focus today. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. Our last caller, Susan, was talking about being present with people, you know, as death approaches. And she mentioned, I think, a little frustration on her own in not really getting much of a useful experience from visits to hospices. But Norma, I understand that is something that you do in your course, is take field trips out to hospices. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't even know about the hospice option. there's such aggressive treatment going on in the hospitals, and I don't know that people are becoming aware of hospice maybe until the very bitter end, but hospice is a really amazing palliative care kind of end-of-life treatment that's just an amazing thing, because not only does it support the patient who's going through the death process, but it's very often supporting the family too, you know. And so I do take the students to the hospice. By definition, you have 6 months or less to live if you're a hospice patient. And I think they really get it. They get to see and talk to folks who are at the end of their life. And honestly, those folks are living every single day until they die. And they just have the best time when the students show up. You know, and we even did a service project at the nearby hospice. There were 3 rooms that were being used for storage. And the students went in after the field trip and really completely redid those rooms so that they were patient-friendly rooms now. So I think it's a very profound field trip experience for them.
And that's wondering what's in terms of you know, what would you call the hallmarks of a good hospice?
Well, I think you have to have a very caring nursing staff. They have to know exactly how to deliver pain, the latest in pain management techniques. There should be no one in pain. We've got an incredible amount of knowledge now about pain management. The hospice that we go to has 24-hour visiting. So if you've got family members that work late, if you've got family members that work, you know, in the morning and can only come in the afternoon, people are allowed to stay with their loved ones all the time if they'd like to. There's even an extra room where there's a bed if someone needs to stay right nearby if someone's dying. And it should be kind of a joyful place, too. You know, it doesn't need to be depressing. It can be bright and friendly, and people can still live out their last days, you know, in a very nice way.
Erica, in the times when you joined the class on trips to hospices, what sort of experiences did you see? And I'm especially wondering on perhaps the visitors who may have to learn that they can, you know, not treat it like they're just waiting for somebody to die there.
Well, I think the hospice was actually a really important field trip. When I went several times, but one moment that sticks out in my mind in particular is going into the hospice with a bunch of students who, you know, haven't really been around people who are dying necessarily. Some have not. And going into the room of a man named Jim, who Norma knows very well, mm-hmm. who didn't have legs, if I remember correctly, and he used to work on a tugboat, and he was very old, but he had actually outlived the length of what they thought he was going to live. And the students came into his room, and they sat there for, you know, a good chunk of time, talking to him about his life on the tugboat, and I think that was, you know, that was a really important moment because he was getting a chance to share his life experience. The students were, you know, interacting with him as a human, not as somebody who's a dying person. And I think that changed the way they viewed hospice, really. And I think that those experiences go on all the time. But that was, go ahead.
I was going to say, even afterwards, after this field trip, some of my students end up back at the hospice, but it's because of family members there. So they go home and they tell their family, hey, I went to this great place, and what about Grandma? You know, are we at that point with Grandma? And one of my students, her dad ended up there, and she stayed with him until he passed away. So with each of these field trips, sometimes the students need to use that knowledge almost immediately. I can't tell you how often they've gone back up to the funeral home because they know the funeral director now and they know the process of planning a funeral, you know, or again, like at the hospice where they need to use that knowledge almost immediately.
There's also this reminded me of another student who was briefly in the book, but when I was in the course, her father was in hospice. I don't know if this is the same one you're speaking of or maybe another, but her name was Melissa.
Yes.
And her, you know, the students, she was part of the class of the students who were visiting the hospice while one of their, you know, peers' fathers was actually dying, and he actually did pass away over the course of the next couple weeks. So they were seeing it right there with a friend, and they actually became her. You know, she was a student who didn't come to school with a lot of friends and felt like she didn't really fit in. And after she got out of the class, she had this whole community of people that she was now very close to and who were giving her support in the immediate aftermath of her father's death.
Well, still time for your feedback as we talk about death with author Erica Hayasaki and death class instructor Norma Bowe of Keene University. Our number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me go to line one and Cindy from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make a quick comment, then I'll hang up. You know, almost everybody has obviously dealt with death, and it can be whether it's the death of a family member or a friend or even a beloved pet. It all makes it affects everybody uniquely, I think. And that's the process you have to go through in grieving the loss of that individual, I think it's very unique. And I think that one of the things we as friends of those individuals can do is to try to support them in that process, even if it's not always the way we might grieve, because everybody, you know, is different in how that loss affects them and how long it takes them to get through that pain and all of that. And so, because I've noticed sometimes, you know, in loss, people try to tell you how to grieve, or they try to tell you, you know, what you should do to take the steps. And most of the time, I think what people need is just support and someone to be there to listen to them and to kind of hold their hand, so to speak, as they go through the process, because it's very different, I think, for everyone. And that's at least been my experience with death. It's a very unique thing. And even two members of the same family might deal with it differently. So that's all. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Cindy, thank you very much for the call. And Norma, if I could ask you a little bit more about that, about the grieving process and how it is for people.
Well, the caller is absolutely right. It's a different process for everyone. Some people completely shut down. They become depressed. They're not able to concentrate. They stop eating, or they eat too much. They stop sleeping, or they sleep too much. Other people get angry. Some people become workaholics. Some people have something called a delayed grief response, where they don't grieve the death until something happens many years later. So we tend to compartmentalize, especially in the beginning, and it can be a different trajectory, really, for everyone.
So there's no right or wrong way to grieve, or
absolutely.
But for someone who's going through it, is there any constructive advice to give?
Yeah, I think the best advice we can give people is to say that you can't expect to be okay right away. We in society expect you to be 100%, and you're just not going to be 100%. And even when you do start to feel better, those anniversary dates kind of take the wind out of your sails. You know, anniversary dates are very difficult. I have a friend whose mom committed suicide 25 years ago, and on those anniversary dates, she suffers. You know, she just has a really difficult time remembering everything leading up to that tragic day. And, you know, there's a lot of theory about how people grieve and the stages of grieving, but the truth is some people don't go through those stages. Some people have their own map for grief, and we just have to honor each individual's grief process.
Let's go ahead and take another call. This is line two. Bob from Champaign, good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. I wanted to say that man is composed of body and spirit, and when you die, your body is dead, but your spirit lives on, and you can enjoy an afterlife with Almighty God if you have lived according to His precepts. And faith in the Almighty is much better than just living a life as if you were an atheist and no more than an animal.
Okay.
There are stories of people dying and people come back to life through the power of Almighty God, that is Jesus. And it has happened before, and it is a huge, huge topic that is much bigger than just the fact of people dying.
Okay, Bob, thank you very much. And that really brings up a big question we haven't been talking about, is as you talk about death, Norma, in your class, you're also talking about people's very strong beliefs about what happens next, and that is certainly going to inform whatever they do. And, of course, I don't know what your own beliefs are, but you must be having a class full of people with all sorts of beliefs.
Absolutely. And in that classroom, everyone's beliefs are respected, and people do come from all sorts of theoretical and, you know, religious constructs, really. And we do spend a little bit of time looking at the religions of the world and what each of them say about what happens after we die. We also spend a little bit of time, the students interview someone who has a different belief system than they do, to kind of understand what those mourning rituals are, you know. But frankly, in the class, we don't really focus on one particular belief system over another. It's really everyone's individual idea of what happens after we die.
Are all your students okay with that? Because I'm gathered that if you believe strongly that this is reality, you may be uncomfortable having that understanding not given precedence.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of it. No one's understanding takes precedence over anyone else's understanding. Everyone's understanding is respected. And, you know, I lay that down. That groundwork is laid the very first day of class. It's actually in the syllabus that we will respect everyone's point of view when it comes to that.
I'm going to we have, I think, a couple of minutes left. I wonder if we can get through quickly. Of course we can't. But you talk about in the book, Erica, you write about in the book, about the idea of a generativity laid out by psychologist Eric Erickson. It is so much of what seems to be discussed in your course, Norma. Is there any way that quickly you can talk about what this means as far as how people approach death?
Erica, do you want to?
Well, I chose that life cycle model as kind of a backbone for the book. I don't think that's definitely not all she focuses on. That's one lecture. You know, Norma can definitely talk about Erickson, but he has the different stages of life, and each stage, you know, you learn something that passes you on to the next stage and eventually ends up into the very final stage when you are dying, and how you're looking at your life and how you lived it. And so for me as a writer, I just found that that cycle would be an interesting kind of model, because Norma was so influenced by Erickson, and she, you know, she really learned from that model and includes that, and that was it's a big part of her lecture. So for me, just writing style, I use that as to show some of the different stories in the book, and to compare them with the life cycle, so people kind of understood the different stages that people were going through. I don't know if that helps, but Norma's kind of the expert on Erickson.
Well, you know, the generativity stage, Erickson talks about that being our time in life to give back to the next generation. And it's not all about money. It's not about leaving a house or a bank account. It's really about leaving our wisdom and leaving our essence, and encouraging the next generation to do even better than we did. And I'm finding, as I've taught the course and as I'm living my own life, and you know, the Be the Change community service and activism group grew out of the Death and Perspective class. And I'm really learning now that community service and activism, giving back to the community, giving back to your family, giving back to your children with wisdom and knowledge, doing something for someone else is really part of the grief healing process.
Yeah, and I think that in reporting the book, you know, that stage of generativity was what stood out to me the most. It was kind of the heart of this class and of the book, because these students, you know, after these field trips, were able to go and remake the hospice facility that they, you know, make it over and make it a nice place with, you know, new paints and everything, and then they went on and did a homeless shelter, and now they go on and do community service projects all over the country. And this is something I witnessed. So the class turned in, you know, a lot of the students carried these lessons over, particularly the generativity model, over into community service. So that really is what I think is kind of the underlying theme of the class and of the book.
Well, my thanks to you both. We are out of time. My thanks to you, Erica Hayasaki, the author of The Death Class, A True Story About Life, published by Simon & Schuster. And my thanks to you, Norma Bo, for being on the program. You teach The Death Class, Death in Perspective, at Keene University in Union, New Jersey.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone who called or emailed your questions. My apologies to those of you that I wasn't able to get on the air. Focus is produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Wyan Weber is our intern. On tomorrow's show, we will be talking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin, the private currency, virtual currency that now venture capitalists are starting to invest in. Some major retailers are considering accepting it as payment. Does Bitcoin really have a future to become a new form of mainstream currency or not? We'll talk with Jim Angel, not the climatologist, but the professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania from the School of Business at Georgetown University, about Bitcoin, and also with a local businessman here in central Illinois who takes Bitcoin. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Remember, you can continue the discussion on Focus on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.